offer that we got on Friday or over the weekend to let us know what the Senate is offering, and then ask if anyone wants to come up to be heard on some of the Senate amendments, and then probably go into recess for a while so the House can discuss how we're going to move forward. So, Ms. Pontius, if you want to start by going through the Senate offer.
Oh, and just for the record, Senator Goodwin is out sick today, just so you know why she's not here today.
Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, members, starting with the first part of it, there's the House Sections 1 and 2, which are kind of parallel sections in the DHS licensing statute. And the Senate basically accepted the substance of the House position, but rewrote the language. And that is in the 8-5 amendment, which you have. And we've run this past Mr. Kerber in the department, and he likes the Senate language better. There's one little tweak that I found out about it that needs to be made on that one. And there's a reference in there. I don't have the amendment right now. Thank you. And this was inadvertent. If you look on the A5 where it refers to on 1.6 and 1.13, it refers just to section 260B.198, which is where delinquency records are expunged under the juvenile law. There are some other expungement provisions, I believe, for like petty juvenile offenses. So it's better just to refer to chapter 260B. So the Senate offer would be the A5 with that kind of change. And then the next is House Section 3 and Senate Section 1. And the Senate accepts the House offer there, which would be the House position. And then the House Section 4, Senate Section 2, deletion of expunged records. This is the business screening service language. The Senate accepts the House position, but without the delayed effective date. Since this is really clarification to current law, there's no reason for delaying it until January 1, 2015, because it's totally outside of the expungement statutes themselves. And the language of the two bills was identical. That's it. And then House Section 5, Senate Section 3, this was the eviction expungement. And would take the Senate position, but then add that an oral amendment that was suggested referring to expungements and the court's inherent authority. So, like, if you look at the language that's on R4, basically referred to on the Senate side on 2.32 after 484.014 insert or under the court's inherent authority.
Ms. Pontius, are you talking about the housing eviction?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, yes.
Okay.
And that was an issue that was brought up at the last conference committee. And I think the House actually may have made a reference to that in its
offer. We accept it.
And that's the actual language.
Yes, yeah.
Next one is the House Section 6 and the Senate Section 4. And the Senate position would be to basically, on the waiting periods, both bills have the 1 year for the state of adjudication, and the Senate would accept the House language, which split up the misdemeanor offenses, so that it'd be 2 years for the petties and gross, and 4 years for the gross misdemeanors, where the Senate was at 3. But then it would retain the 5 year for the felonies instead of the 6 year offer from the House. And then with respect to the crimes, it accepted the addition of receiving stolen goods and contempt by the House, but then also added back in crimes that were in the Senate language with the House language dealing with the sale of synthetic cannabinoids and fleeing a peace officer and furnishing a dangerous weapon. then there is, I think there's an A-12 amendment and an A-14 amendment that deal with some of the issues related to domestic abuse and stalking and harassment crimes.
Mm-hmm. Signed off on that.
Excuse me, the A-12, I think Mr. Backus can address.
Mm-hmm.
This is intended to clarify what level of conviction someone has so you know which waiting period they come under.
Madam Chair, members, the A-12 just simply essentially refers to statute 609.13 when determining the penalty levels applicable in the expungement bill. And it was an attempt by the Senate to clarify the language that Ms. Engler from the BCA thought was ambiguous. So that's the Senate attempt to clarify that. And if you'd like more information, I mean, if you look at that statute, that's the one where if you're getting either a felony conviction or a gross misdemeanor conviction, but you're essentially penalized in getting a less serious sentence, that basically the conviction level will be the level of the actual sentence imposed as opposed to the level of the crime you actually committed. So if you get a gross misdemeanor sentence or a misdemeanor sentence for a felony conviction, it would be considered the gross misdemeanor or misdemeanor. So that's what section 609.13 refers to.
Madam Chair, members, and the A-14 is kind of more of a global amendment, I guess, for addressing some of the concerns of domestic violence victims. And so the House right now has a provision under which for certain domestic abuse or sexual assault crimes, you can't get an expungement. I'll let it expire as July 15, 2013. This amendment would take that out, but then add in special provisions that give access for victims of domestic violence. Mr. Backus worked on this as well. I think it amends the limitations on the order. It actually adds a new subdivision where these individuals could get access to the data for certain specified purposes if you look at the A-14.
Ms. Tanias, I don't know if I missed it or if you haven't gotten there yet. What's this, correct the parenthetical reference on the House, just technical change?
Madam Chair, I was looking at that as well before we came in, and I couldn't figure out what I can't remember if that was the note that I made or if the back was made.
Where is this?
Sorry. It's a typo. If you look, and it's in both bills that came from the original bill. And right now it refers to escape from civil commitment or mental illness. And Senator Goodwin was asking us what that meant, and we looked at it, and it should say civil commitment for mental illness.
Okay.
And then the next is House Section 7 and Senate Section 5. This is the petitionless expungement. And the Senate accepts the House author on that, which is the House delayed effective date. And that's consistent with everything else in the House delayed effective date. And then also Section 8, which deals with the filing fee. Both bills have something that carves out these new categories of expungement from the filing fee waiver, and the only difference would be to add a January 1, 2015 effective date, consistent with when those clauses actually take effect. And then in House Section 9, Senate Section 7, the Senate accepts the House position. the remedy and the standard that's used by the court in granting an expungement. And then House Section 10, which is not in the Senate bill, the Senate accepts. Also, House Section 11, the Senate accepts. And House Section 12 and Senate Section 8, the Senate accepts the House author with some changes. And there's a couple of amendments. First, there's an A7 amendment here, which I think have in the files, which would be added. It's actually drafted to the Senate language, so I just have to put it in the right place on the House side. And this is an alternative to the data destruction provisions that are currently in the Senate language that was suggested by the BCA and the county attorneys. If you look on R11, lines 17 to 20, the disagree choice that. So it just makes sure that an agency that gets an expunged record maintains it in a manner that restricts its use to the purpose for which it was obtained.
What amendment is this?
That is the A7. And that was not included, that was an oversight in the descriptive summary of the Senate offer. And this addresses cases where a criminal justice agency is seeking access to a record that was expunged under the current law, basically, where there's not a conviction, so all proceedings are resolved in favor of the petitioner. And it would kind of continue the current law and require a court order in those cases for a criminal justice agency to get access to it. Under the new provisions in the bill, there's more of an automatic sharing. House already accepted the Senate language on the Board of Teaching and Department of Education getting access to data. And there were just some other miscellaneous cross-references and language changes that were made or need to be made consistent with that amendment. Like where there are references just to the Commissioner of Human Services right now on the current law, you want to refer also to the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education. House Section 13, Senate Section 9 is the distribution and confirmation of the expungement order. And again, you got the Senate position with the House effective date, and then also, which the Senate accepts, but then there's an A9 amendment, which was requested by the county attorneys. And basically, it would require the, if someone wants to get a copy of the expungement order, they have to request it in the petition and have it mailed at an address that they provide in the petition. But this addresses concerns of the county attorneys that either they wouldn't know how to notify somebody or they might have a wrong address or something and inadvertently release something to the wrong place.
Could you explain that a little? I thought the House and Senate had identical identical language, and I don't know where this came from.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we do. I think this sort of ties in with the liability question and where you end up with the remedies.
Okay.
Because they were kind of concerned about, I think you had some discussion last time about willful versus just sort of negligent releases. And they thought this at least addressed some of their concerns. They could probably better articulate it, but not all of them. But you're right, yeah, they were identical. So.
That's a question?
No. Wait.
I can wait to ask my question after she finishes.
Okay.
Okay, then we're on civil remedy. The Senate still wants the Senate position. So that kind of ties in with the amendment we just discussed.
Okay.
And then the House Section 14, dealing with the delayed date when agencies have to comply, it's 2016, and the Senate does not accept that.
go ahead.
And then the appropriations, I guess, are going to be in the omnibus supplemental budget bill. And then the last provision in the Senate offer is an issue that came up from the Department of Human Services, but isn't in either bills. And that is the A-10 amendment. And this addresses cases where the Department of Human Services, or actually it would apply to any agency or jurisdiction that is served with an expungement petition. There's a concern that in some cases they might need to share private or confidential data as part of that expungement court process. That's not clear that they have the authority to do that. I don't know if Mr. Kerber's here. Better address the issue, and this was language that we worked on with him to address that problem. But it is something new, it's not in the bill.
You want me to speak to that, or?
Yeah, Mr. Kerber, why don't you come up now just to talk about the A-10.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the amendment that we spent some time working out with a variety of people on Friday, and it does a couple of things. One is that it gives an agency permission to submit information to the court that would otherwise be private or confidential data on the individual. And so like at the Department of Human Services, the default classification for everything we have is that it's private. And so ironically, then when we give that information to the court, the default classification would be that it would become public. And so somebody petitioning for an expungement of their record could then inadvertently be exposing more information about themselves that they intended. So what this does, it gives the agency the permission to give the court the private or confidential information, but then it also requires us at that time to notify the court and the individual that we are sharing private and confidential information. And then the individual has an option at that point to request a protective order on that data.
Senator Champion.
And to the testifier, and this was worked out also with Melissa Hugdahl and the others, is that right?
Madam Chair and Senator Champion, yes, Melinda Hugdahl and Council on Crime and Justice and the BCA, there was a lot of wordsmithing going on, and everybody's comfortable with this.
A comment. I'm getting a little uncomfortable here with how long we're going to keep doing this. My suggestion, pretty soon we should stop taking input and carving up these things in different amendments and move ahead with a bill of our own. This point counterpoint stuff, I don't know. If we want a bill to get done, I think we're going to have to start making decisions, just putting the pen to the paper. But just a comment. Otherwise, we're going to go back and forth here.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. This is for Senator Champion. Senator Champion, in your offer, you started to address some of the concerns that were brought under the civil remedy that was raised by the county attorney. I'm curious as to why you added one provision and did not add the other that they raised.
Under this,
Senator Champion.
From our research, and Ms. Pontius can speak to this, we looked under the Data Privacy Act. And it doesn't use the term knowingly. It actually just uses the language that we have articulated there. And it's my understanding that the section of the Data Privacy Act that the county attorneys was referring to is something other than what is within the sphere of our consideration here. And maybe Ms. Pontius can speak a little clearly to that than I.
Ms. Pontius?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Champion. I had a few conversations with, like, Nancy Haas. They understand that right now in the Data Practices mm-hmm. Act, the willful requirement only applies if you're trying to also get exemplary damages on top of the regular damages and attorney fees. They're just concerned that they might be exposed just for negligent releases. But that's how the Data Practices Act works.
So that's why.
Okay. Any other questions
from members
on
this? Mr. Kerber, do you have?
Madam Chair, I was reminded after talking about the A-10 amendment that the hope would have been that this could be effective the day following enactment, that we would start notifying individuals that were submitting private data to the court. There's no need for that provision to wait.
Okay. Oh, and Mr. Kerber, since you're here, the Senate offer to make the changes to the DHS language in Section 1 and 2. Is that language that you're comfortable with?
Madam Chair, I was, and I thought in reading that that Ms. Pontius did a nice job of making it simpler and easier to understand. In moments ago, however, I was approached by Ms. Hugdahl, who was able to read another issue into this. So if we have inherent authority expungements, this doesn't address that. There's still people will still be getting an expungement, perhaps under the inherent authority, and we will be getting those records. And so those situations aren't addressed in the more refined language.
So just add inherent authority to the A5. Does that take care of it?
I think so.
And then sooner or later, like I agree with with Representative Cornish, if we can't get some understanding here, then we'll start carving up our own bill, and then it'll just be done. So, but will that those changes clarify what it is, any of your concerns?
Madam Chair and Senator Champion, yes. The bill, the language as was originally in the House side was kind of clunky, but it did the job. Ms. Pontius rewrote it, and it's easier to understand, but it missed that one little provision. So either way.
Thank you. If I could also get some clarification about how the A7 and A8 interact with each other. I know that wasn't offered by the Senate, but it would be helpful to understand how they interact.
Ms. Pontius?
Well, I think we're going to have this question answered first by Representative Hillstrom, House Senate Counsel, and then we are going to take testimony from
So, Ms. Penny?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, yeah, these are two amendments that were requested by the county attorneys. The A7 was part of the Senate offer. The A8 was denied, so they might better be able to address this. But the A7 was the one that replaced the data destruction requirement. And so it's a different issue. The A8, I think, was more just clarifying language that the county attorneys wanted. That made it clear that they could use expunged records for things like in another court proceeding. You know, if an expunged record was relevant, I don't know, to a criminal history score or something, that they can give you a much more detailed explanation of why they would like it.
Yeah, if we could
describe how they fit together.
We have the county attorneys come up. Ms. Haas, if you could just state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, Nancy Haas with Messerly and Kramer here on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I know we couldn't hear over there, so I'm just going to introduce it and let Tammy McConkie from Ramsey County talk about this. But on the A8, you know, we've been talking a lot during these expungement hearings about access and then utilizing that information for a future crime in a court proceeding. And so I'm going to let Ms. McConkie talk about the ways in which that would take place.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Throughout the process of the case, this being able to actually use the record in addition to accessing it and seeing it becomes very, very critical. And I want to point out at the beginning that these are situations where a person is alleged to have reoffended. This isn't, I think, the typical person that you might have had in mind when considering this legislation. So, for example, if I'm a charging attorney and a police officer brings me a case, with allegations of malicious punishment of a child. And let's say he arrives at 10:30 in the morning with a suspect that's going to time out at noon. I've got an hour and a half to read all of the reports, analyze the evidence, and file the complaint. And if I can see in the reports that there is a prior conviction of malicious punishment, that becomes very critical. Malicious punishment at the outset is a gross misdemeanor, but it's a felony if there's a prior conviction within a certain level of time. So my dilemma then becomes, should I put that in the complaint and use that and tell the court? Or if I do that and the statute isn't clear that I may use this, in addition to, you know, exchanging and opening, am I subjecting my agency to further liability because I've inappropriately used that. And that dilemma then continues to travel along the case. Once I file the complaint, the bail evaluator can see that a prior conviction has occurred. Can they put that in the bail evaluation? And I have to tell you, as an officer of the court, I would feel very uncomfortable arguing bail in front of a judge knowing that there was a prior offense and not letting the court, who is responsible to the community to make a decision about release or conditions of release, know that there's been a prior conviction. So I think our ability to not only see what's happened but actually use it becomes very, very critical. As the case continues, both defense attorneys and prosecutors have duties to disclose to the other what they know about the defendant's criminal history. The rules of court require that. So if a defense attorney is talking to his or her client and the client says, I have a prior conviction, but it's been disclosed, then that defense attorney has a dilemma, too. They know about it. Can they use it? They are required to tell what they know under the rules of criminal procedure.
But isn't it already clear under the statute here, even if this particular proposed legislation is not adopted, that you, as a prosecutor, can have access to the record of someone who has a prior or an expunged record? You have access to that information already.
Ms. McConkie.
Madam Chairman and Senator Champion, I think what we're trying to make absolutely clear is, what does that access mean? The words that are in the statute seem to be open and exchange. Does that mean that I can repeat what I know in a public document? And that's the concern.
It says for criminal prosecution. I'm not quite sure if you and I are reading the same information. You're saying open and exchange as it pertains to exchanging of information. But as a prosecutor, if you're prosecuting the matter, you have access to an expunged record. And so I'm not quite sure how that's interacting with what it is that you are saying.
I think she was talking about, so if a defense attorney requests through discovery what the prosecutor has in the record as far as criminal history, if I'm understanding correctly, you want to make sure that you're able to exchange that for those reasons. But I guess if that's a concern, I don't know why it wasn't addressed earlier, or maybe it's just coming into light now because of the other amendments being offered. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. So, Senator Champion, one example also might be, so if I'm prosecuting one person, but the witness that I'm using to prosecute that person with has an expunged record, who can I share that with? Because I have to disclose the criminal history of my witnesses to the defense. So my question is, if I can't use an expunged record...
of a witness?
Right. If an expunged record is expunged and you can't use it, so the defense attorney, right, the defense attorney then has to know whether or not they're entitled to use the criminal conviction that's been expunged to impeach the witness who is testifying against the defendant. So that's the question of whether or not you can or can't.
I think that's a different question, because the question that I heard is around prosecution. And so we look at Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Chaffee.
If we look at prosecution, we're talking about a defendant. Right? And so I'm not a defendant, but if I was a defendant, right, and if I had an expunged record, right now, under this bill, the prosecutor has access to that expunged record because they are using it for prosecution purposes. That's what the statute says, right? And that's what this law allows. It also allows for this information to be shared with criminal justice agencies already, even for law enforcement purposes, even before a case is brought before the prosecuting authority. Law enforcement now have access to these records. They can go and check, and before it comes to the prosecuting authority, law enforcement checks it, brings all the information to you as a prosecutor, and says, hey, by the way, for enhanceability purposes, this person already had a DWI or they had whatever. That information is already there. So I don't see the purpose of this new amendment because it's clear as to what it is that they have access to. Now, what you raised, Representative Hillstrom, is a slightly different question because now you're talking about witnesses that you want to potentially bring into the process and whether now the record of a witness has to be provided to a defendant or defense or to anyone else because now they have an expense record. And I think that's a totally different question than what is before us and what is related to this whole issue of expungement. And I think that is now expanding it someplace else that no one really intended because this is all about a defendant or whether someone's being prosecuted. And so I would not be in favor of that expansion that you are providing. And I think the witness has the concerns that have already been raised have been addressed in the provisions of law here. Now, they may want some comfort language, but I think the language is already clear there.
Well, Ms. Haas, isn't the A8 in direct conflict with the A7? That's what I can't figure out.
No, Madam Chair, the A8 was drafted to take care of the concern by Senator Peterson that once you have this, the information, that you only use it for the purpose for which it was intended, for that particular the reason you receive the access. You know, his original version wanted us to destroy it, and we were concerned that when, you know, our case file needed to have the appropriate materials. And so really the A8 only talks about the A7 just talks about whoever accesses that piece of information, they can only use that piece of information for the reason that they requested it. It tries to limit it. So there were some concerns about once you have the information, could you create a database, for example, trying to prohibit the use for anything other than the reason you accessed it. The A8 is really not intended to be new. I appreciate Senator Champion's discussion because legislative history is always important. When you show lawyers language, sometimes they like more comfort in the words using in addition to exchanging and opening. And so as we described, our interest is only making sure there's clear direction on utilizing that information that you have already accessed in a future proceeding, in a court proceeding.
Well, what would be your comments on Representative Hillstrom's interpretation that you'd be allowed access to witness criminal history? Because I had never intended that, certainly. I mean, I think that can open a whole new door if you just happen to witness a crime and then all of a sudden your expunged record is being opened up again and it's back on the court record. So if you could provide information on what your interpretation is as far as that goes.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, you know, the goal of every prosecution is to be fair and just. And one example might be if the person who witnessed the crime has a prior conviction of false information to the police. That's something that every defense attorney in the world would want to know about and would want to use to impeach that person should they testify. So currently that is part of a prosecution. That's something that, under the rules of criminal procedure, prosecutors and defense attorneys are required to tell each other what they know about the criminal history of each and every witness, including the defendant, that they intend to call at trial. And so convictions in particular that go to someone's veracity are an important thing for everybody to know.
So then in that case, could a victim have their expunged record? If they were a victim of a crime, could they have their expunged criminal record open for impeachment purposes in trial?
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, we are required to disclose what we know about the criminal history of victims as well as the defendant and other witnesses. So, yes.
Does that statute change that?
Isn't it, Madam Chair, but isn't it also true that if a prosecutor wants or anybody wants to, you know, provide Spriegel evidence, or if they want a record open, that they can, ask the court to open a record, but also just because a record is there, there is also a motion to the court to allow that record to become a part of the court proceedings. Isn't that right?
Ms. McConkie.
Madam Chairman, the Senator Champion, yes. In order to impeach someone with a prior conviction, a prosecutor or a defense attorney, whoever wants to use that prior conviction, does make a motion to the court once they've disclosed the existence of that conviction that they intend to use it. And the court then, as far as my recollection, is uses a five-part analysis. Please don't ask me what the five parts are because it's been a while since I've looked at the case law, but uses a five-part analysis in determining whether that conviction is relevant to the matter at hand. So in terms of whether the conviction would actually be used against someone for impeachment, there's a safeguard there in that the court would make that analysis. But in order to get there, they have to know about it, and both sides still need, at least how I read this statute, would need to honor their duties under the rules of criminal procedure and at least disclose the existence of it to the other side.
So then if a victim had their expunged record opened by the prosecution and it was used for the purpose of impeachment on the stand, would that court record then be public? So that expunged record would then be public again?
It would, Madam Chairman, it would be public in the sense that the court hearing that the victim was testifying at was probably open to the public, and it would be in the transcript. So it would be, and there are often reporters in the room, to be honest. So, yes, it could be public in that sense. That does happen now to victims.
Are there other questions from members on the A7 or A8? Ms. Haas, did you have any comments on the other amendments?
If I could really quickly, Madam Chair, since I misspoke at the last hearing, the BCA amendment, which is the A13, as you heard described, when BCA drafted this, it was their understanding that what we had talked about in the House was that you would need a court order for anything that was resolved in favor of the defendant, and it was really what our agreement was if they were found not guilty. So there's a couple extra words that need to be in there that we've provided to staff. So I just wanted to raise that for you. There is a difference between resolved in favor of the defendant and not guilty. And in the House language we had put together to make it clear that it was for those found not guilty, we would have to go and get an ex parte court order.
So you provided that to, did you provide that to the Senate?
I provided it to both you and Senator Champion.
Okay.
And I'm sure I can hand it over to Kathy Pontius, too.
So is the Senate, or is the county attorney's position on this A8 amendment contingent on adoption of the A7 or the... I know, I'm just wondering.
Madam Chair, they're completely different and very important to us.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Neumeister, why don't you come forward?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. This is my first time appearing before the conference committee as being someone over 3 decades plus here. Conference committees, yes, I agree, Madam Chair and Representative Cornish and Senator Champion, must be closed. But also good information is important to make sure that we all know, the public and legislators know, clearly what's happening. And I want to focus on those particular items that I have been lobbying on through the process. One is that my understanding is the House position that all sealed records through the end of this year will go under the old provision. That's what you've agreed on. That's my understanding, that you will need an ex parte court order. You know, agencies will be notified, and then if there's a sealed record, then they'll go get an ex parte order. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then the second item is that you now have a new regime based on that. And I just wanted to, at least from my understanding from being here and following and trying to catch up to date is that on R11, on lines 8-5 through 8-16, that if under the Board of Teaching, the Licensing Board, ask or the Licensing Division of the Minnesota Department of Education ask for a background check, they're going to be told that, yes, we have an expunged record on Rich Neumeister. Is that correct, or has that been part of the Senate proposal, or has that been adopted already?
People who had a position on what the Senate counteroffer was to the House. There was language that the Senate added regarding the Board of Teaching and the Minnesota Department of Education, which is similar to how DHS currently operates. They have to have proper notice of an expungement petition, and that the notice or the order has to be directed toward them in order for that expungement order to apply to them. The House has agreed to adopt that language from the Senate.
Okay. Madam Chair, then the only other point is then on the new regime that's being asked for data going forward. Two things. It's important that the language be criminal investigations, not investigations, so to make sure it's not considered as part of a background check for other kinds of state statutes. My understanding, the Holberg Amendment that was done on R10 has been taken out. So any state statutory background checks, if let's say I'm with Metro Mobility and there's a mandatory state statutory background check, that Metro Mobility or any other agency will not get a notice saying, yes, we have a record on Rich Neumeister. Okay. Then the last point is for on the regime because it was related to it. This relates to the A13 amendment, which I think is part of the Senate offer. I think it's important, no matter if you're going forward January 1st, 2015, to be as close as to the old regime, the old way of doing it, as you can. So I do believe some type of ex parte order or some type of independent review is important, and I would suggest that language. Now, the county attorneys, they have come out and sort of said, well, we want to put if it's not guilty. But there are a lot of people that are not charged. When we came up with the language back in 1996, when I was working with Phil Carruthers and Don Betzelt on this, who were the chief authors of the bill back then, there were hundreds and hundreds of type situations under independent authority of the court that were being expunged. And I think it's important that you have to have some type of high standard as best a standard as you can for an independent review. So if that's the case, anything in favor, I would like to suggest what the language would be now. That's my current understanding. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for adopting at least for going for or for past, which is an important item.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Melinda Hugdahl from Legal Aid, and I will be really brief. I've spoken to Mr. Kerber, and I think we're on the same page. The A5 amendment, we would just recommend a couple of changes to that just to make sure the intent that I think is what everybody intends is what the language says. Currently, it says that the individual receives the order, but the record was opened for purposes of a background study, what would become public is private. I think that the House had a nice phrase that says that does not limit the commissioner's access to the record. So if a person gets an order that doesn't limit the commissioner's access to the record and they access the record, then what would become public remains private data in their hands. So there's a piece of that conjunctive that should go back in. The statutory references are 260B and 609A. This is what Mr. Kerber was referencing about the possibility of getting an inherent authority order. I think those will probably be few, but just to make sure that all of that data handling happens the same way. And It also references criminal records, and again, we'll have maybe some juvenile adjudications. And we're happy to very quickly get language to both House and Senate to clean that up.
Well, Ms. Hugdahl, I mean, I think this goes to Representative Cornish's original comments that now there's language that didn't pass either the House or the Senate, and we're talking about adding a conference committee, and it sounds like there's several changes that need to be made to the amendment that we're talking about offering. So if you can get those changes to us as soon as possible, because we're planning on coming back with a counteroffer pretty quick here, so that would be appreciated.
And if I might say that
Senator
I hope
Champion.
that would be the last change and that they can really look at it, because what's happening is that we're getting information and then everyone's saying it's okay, then somebody comes back later, and I'm just hoping that you all give us some peace here.
Yes. Is there someone here from the Battered Women's? Mr. Carlson, do you want to come up? Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam
Chair and members, Joel Carlson, and I represent the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women, and our association has been actively monitoring your process. And we did have an opportunity to look at the Senate language on Friday afternoon as a group. I wasn't at that meeting, so I'm the messenger, so don't shoot the messenger. But they didn't take a position in favor of the Senate language. They prefer the House language, and their concerns are really, I think, focused on a couple of points. Kind of the narrow exceptions that you would have to access the records, Internal Revenue, innocent spouse, the immigration issue, and some family law instances, and the issue about actual knowledge of, that the record is available, give them some concern. As I have watched the House language develop, which expires on the prohibition expires on the 15th of, or excuse me, on July of 2015, I really think the window that we're wrestling over here is about 6 months. And I think the idea in the House language is to work on language to allow these records to be accessed. The Senate offer, the Senate language is effective January 1st of 2015. So I really think the window that we're talking about here to try and work this issue out is about 6 months. And I think between now and the end of the 2015 session, I think that language can be worked out in an acceptable way. You know, I attended most of the work group meetings through the interim, and for most of the time until Senator Champion and I met in early February, the issue of domestic violence records and expungements were just not on the table at all. And so we really haven't had a chance with our membership to fully vet how that should work, and we'd like that opportunity. And we do think that we're really only talking about a six-month difference between where the Senate's at being effective with this limited language on January 1 of 15 and the House provision, which expires the prohibition in July of 2015. So we prefer the House position, but we do appreciate the work in this offer as well.
Questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I think we have all the information we need, unless there's other questions from members or staff. I think our plan is to recess and come back here at 3.
Sounds good.
With a really, really good offer. So we're in recess.
Can you get that done by 3? Becky, can you get that done by
3? I don't know. I just asked 2:15.
Uh-huh.
She can call it when she wants to.
All right, has the floor session started?